Blog Talk Radio.
Well, why won't we go to the doctor? My uncle called, speech all slurred, complaining his arm's numb. He called everyone. He even called my daughter Tierra, because, you know, she's got a year of nursing. Everyone thinks he needs to go to the doctor, including me. So he said, well, will you take me? I'm like, I'm on the road. He goes, I'll wait. Stroke's no joke. Dial 911. Time loss is brain loss. Seriously, dial 911.
Visit StrokesNoJoke.org, brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Good morning, and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank everyone for, if you stayed tuned from 11 o'clock, where I just finished talking with the author about financial literacy. Thank you so much. You can listen to the archive of that show in a couple minutes. But now we're going to be talking to Paula Lucas. Domestic violence is alive and well, not just here in the United States, but all across the globe. Domestic violence, no matter where it's happening, is not right. Hitting, verbally abusing someone, controlling their actions, stalking, all those things are negative and not, that's not a happy relationship. Unfortunately, if you are overseas, though, isolated maybe from your friends and family and from the government here in the United States, some protection, you're even worse of a situation. And that's what Paula is going to talk to us about this morning. I believe she's here on the line. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Joy. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, I think it's a very important issue, and I think because we don't talk about it a lot in the news, we're talking about the war, we're talking about the economy, but those things also affect domestic violence and the rise of domestic violence. Tell us about your story.
Well, I had just graduated from university, and I was in my early 20s, and I met a man who was a Newsweek photojournalist in San Francisco. And he, Palestinian man who, British boarding school education, spoke three languages, just, tall, dark, and handsome, all of the criteria that we think of our Prince Charmings.
Mm-hmm. And you had a university education, so you were a smart woman. Yes.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. And it was the 80s, I was up there. And it was kind of a whirlwind romance. We went and lived in England for 2 years, and then I lived in the United Arab Emirates for 12 years. And during those 14 years of marriage, he became more and more abusive. And at the beginning, it was sort of emotional and psychological. But I'd never been exposed to that in my life, so I really didn't know that that's what was happening.
So you were questioning yourself. You were questioning your judgment about, is this right? Is this wrong? Maybe it's me. Is that what you were going through?
Sure, because, he'd come home and he would be upset because I bought the wrong kind of bread. So I'm like, okay, well, how easy is it to buy the right kind of bread? I mean, it's pretty simple, really. Mm-hmm. So I started taking a lot of blame for his anger. And then it became more physical abuse. I had three children. He was abusing the children. And by this time, I'm an American woman. I'm living in a foreign country. I have American children. He had become an American citizen. So I thought, all I need to do is go to my embassy, and they're going to help me come home.
Mm.
And that was the furthest thing from the truth that I could have imagined.
So what happened when you went to the embassy? They were not friendly? They didn't want to talk to you? They said they couldn't help you?
They did. They were friendly. They talked to me. They said, Paula, if we help you, we'll create an international incident. So there's a lot of, keeping
it again,
the diplomatic.
Say it again. If we help you, help. That was the key word to me.
Yes.
We're going to create an international incident, but you were already getting incidents every day in your house upon your
Absolutely,
physical body.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true. That's very, very true. So you think as an American woman, all you need to do is go to your embassy and say, look, I have American children. I want to go home. You think they're going to help you come home. And that's not what happens. You're under the laws of that foreign country, and even though we were all American, you're still under Islamic law. He had hidden my American children's passports, and there's a policy with the State Department that they can't issue minor American passports, the passports for minor American children, without the approval of both parents. So in these cases, the first thing the abuser does is hide the children's American passports, so you can't get out of the country. Now, this doesn't matter if you're in the Middle East, or if you're in Europe, or if you're in South America. It's the same policy.
Now, what about women, say, in places like Asia? Have you helped or dealt with any women in Asia through...
Sure, absolutely. We have our international toll-free hotline is accessible from 175 countries around the world. So we have, American women calling from all over the world, all different regions.
Let's go back to this. He was hiding the passports. Now, I know the story because I read your bio, but so what did you do? I mean, were you like, I got to leave my kids? I mean, what was going through your mind?
Well, I had left my ex-husband several times, but without the kids, and I had vowed that, you know, I wouldn't leave again unless I got my children out. And luckily, I think it was divine intervention. I think that, you know, a thief stole his money and passport in Germany, and that gave me the opportunity, sort of a window of opportunity where I knew he couldn't come back into the country to try to escape. And I found the children's American passports that he had hidden. But I didn't have access to my own money, so I had to forge a check, you know, with his name on it to take money out to get back to the U.S. to go to my sister's house. And then I also forged documents giving me permission to leave the country with the children, because in those countries, the you can put a travel ban on the children. So even if you have the passports when you get to the airport, there could be a travel ban and you can't leave. So I was able to do that. And
now all through the process, you sound very calm now talking about it, but that was, you know, several years ago. I mean, were you freaking out? Were you sweating bullets? I mean, were you crying?
Yes. Absolutely. I was absolutely terrified. I had three young children, ages 4, 6, and 8. I was trying to get them out of the country. If I had been caught, I would have been put in prison. You know, it was very, very, it was really scary. I was really scared. And even when I got back to the United States, I was scared because I had this perception that he was all powerful and he could, you know, he knew what I was doing. And then I got back to my sister's house in Oregon and I felt, I'm done. You know, I'm home. I'm an American. Mm-hmm. My kids are American. I can live my life. Got an attorney, and then my attorney told me he has the right to fight you to take these children back to the Middle East. And
well, so now, you know, people would say, well, they are his kids too, and was the abuse really that bad? I mean, you know how people talk to women, unfortunately, in situations. They sometimes try to belittle, and also the abuser denies sometimes flat out that they ever abused you, even if they broke their skull and they have a hospital record.
This is exactly what he said. He said, you know, she just took off with the kids. Everything was fine. But the children had been pretty severely abused. And so one of the things I did when I came back was have them speak to a child psychologist. And they disclosed just horrific things. And so I didn't have physical proof of abuse, but I had, you know, the children's sort of spontaneous disclosures of abuse. So luckily, Oregon, and it took 6 months, he fought me for jurisdiction, and Oregon did give me jurisdiction and let me keep the kids in the U.S., and I could, for divorce and custody, but I had no jurisdiction for alimony or child support. So I've been married 14 years, no alimony, no child support, no half of the marital assets, nothing. So at 40 years old, I'm homeless with three kids. I never, ever, ever saw that coming.
Well, a lot of people don't see that. And you know what? You're very fortunate. I just want to say that you're very blessed to still be alive because, unfortunately, in many situations, if you don't know and you're listening to the show, women in domestic violence situations are killed when they decide to leave. They are killed.
Absolutely.
And that's one of their fears of leaving. So it's very easy for us as outsiders, if you're not in an abusive situation or maybe you're not even in a relationship, to wonder why are the women staying in these relationships? Yes, it may be financial, it could be emotional because they're cut off, like in your case, from your friends and family. But one of the key factors is when a woman decides to leave and tries to do it, that is the key time when, unfortunately, she is killed. So it's a big fear factor, you know. So go ahead. So you're homeless and with your kids, you're trying to work this out. So now what came up with the idea of your crisis center? Why did you start thinking about that? You were barely able to take care of yourself, and now you started thinking about others and helping others.
Well, first it was as an American living in a foreign country, I thought, you know, there's no resources. There's nobody, nobody I can call, nobody I can talk to. Nobody seems to understand sort of this international aspect of my situation. So when I first came back, I thought, well, that's what I'm going to start. I'm going to start something to help women who were still overseas and they need help. But then when I encountered the whole jurisdictional issue about not being having to be able to fight legally to keep my American children in their own country, I thought, well, these women need to know what they need to do so when they come back here, they can keep their children here. I mean, luckily, Oregon, the judge in Oregon, gave me jurisdiction based on a human rights defense. I was very, very lucky. But there's so many women, like, leaving European countries and that are coming back to the U.S. for safety that are under the Hague Convention for International Child Abduction. So we needed really a center that could address from the time they're trying to get out all the way until they arrive back in the United States and they get all the legal counsel that they need so they can stay back here and stay safe. So the concept just evolved as my situation evolved and I became, you know, came against more and more and more obstacles.
Well, let me tell the audience, in April 2010, the U.S. Department of Justice awarded the Americans Overseas Domestic Violence Crisis Center with the National Crime Victim Service Award for extraordinary efforts and direct service to crime victims. And that is directly from the U.S. Department of Justice. So that's a wonderful award. How did you feel when you received that award?
Well, we kept saying we felt like we got a star on our homework paper. You know, we've been doing this work for 10 years. And finally, the Department of Justice comes up and says, you know what, you guys are doing a great job. And
yes.
So that was really nice, because we really started as just sort of a little tiny, fragile grassroots existence. And it took 10 years to grow to where we are now. And it's really been an uphill battle.
I was just going to let them know, from what you sent me, you've helped close to 300 women, 300 Americans, with 248 children in 64 countries. You've received close to almost 1,500 crisis calls and emails, and you've helped relocate 11 families fleeing domestic violence back to the USA. Even if you help one family, I think that's a wonderful job. I think it's so important. What are some of the things that, when women call, what are some of the things they first talk to you about?
Well, usually the first thing, you know, they start crying. They've never spoken to anybody about this situation before. They're just so happy that they've been able to find us and be able to talk to somebody. So they'll tell us their story. They'll tell us what happened, you know, why they moved overseas. And a lot of these women, American women, are married to American men, and they went overseas as expatriates, but they're still under the laws of that foreign country. So it's not just American women married to who met maybe foreign men in university and things like that.
American.
It could. So this is, you know, one of the key issues is that it doesn't really matter the nationality of the abuser overseas. It's if you're in that foreign country, you're under those laws. So what we do is we, our advocates, look at their situation. They get all of the details, how many children they have, whether they have access to passports, how old the children are. What, you know, sometimes the children are dual nationality. Let's say they're living in France and the children are American and French. Then that's a big consideration. And then we kind of just compile what her options could possibly be. We have pro bono family law attorneys who can speak to them about their situation and say, well, look, if you stay in France, these are your options. If you come back to the United States, these are your options. And then she can make an informed decision about what the best solution is going to be for her. Then whatever that decision is, we support her in that in any way we can, emotionally, psychologically, financially. We can help with her for pay for housing or utilities. We have a partnership with Virgin Atlantic Airlines. We can fly them back to the United States.
Tell us your phone number, because people are listening and they may need help right now today. Somebody might be listening. Or somebody might listen to the archive of the show. The toll-free crisis from overseas is 1-866-US-WOMEN, correct? Is that correct?
That's correct. And each country has a different AT&T access code. So if you're in different countries, you need to dial another number first. And those numbers are available on our website, or it's on the AT&T access, international access number. So if you're, let's say you're in Peru, then you would have a certain number you would call, and then you dial our number, and then that's internationally toll-free, and we pay all the crisis charges, and it's not traceable.
Now, also,
it doesn't show up on your phone bill.
Yeah, the website for your organization is 866-US-WOMEN, all one word, 866-US-WOMEN.org. And on the website, they talk about who they are, how to get in touch with them, trying to stay safe. You can join their email list. Some of your different campaigns that you have going on. If you're interested in donating money to help the organization, you can also go to their website. And I think it's just important to understand domestic violence sometimes is not just hitting. There are all different types of abuse. Physical abuse is just one. Emotional abuse, insulting the survivor repeatedly, calling the survivor names, yelling at the survivor, blaming the survivor, threatening to hurt or kill the survivor. Those are abuse. Forms of abuse. Also social abuse, I mentioned earlier, about controlling where you're going to go, what you're going to do, who you're going to see, and isolating the person. And then there's also sexual abuse. Just because you're married, yes, I know you're supposed to have sex with your husband, and I think that's a wonderful thing. Actually, it's supposed to help your relationship and make you less stressed. But in a serious note, in a domestic violence situation, if you're being forced to have sex or do uncomfortable sexual acts or things of that nature, or you're being punished by the person not having sex with you, because that's a form of abuse too, your husband not having sex with you as a woman. In a mean-spirited, negative, malicious way, not because of some medical reason. That's a different issue. So they're all different types of abuse. A lot of people just focus on the physical, which is also horrific. But it builds, and as Paula's story showed, she was first being emotionally abused. Correct, Paula?
Correct, yeah. It started out as emotional, and it's very insidious. It's very subtle when it starts out. So you really, it starts growing, so you really don't notice it because you sort of get used to it as each kind of level goes higher and higher. So you, and another thing is the abuser's always blaming you. It's your fault. So you start taking on that. And as women, we tend to be caretakers. We tend to want to make sure everybody's happy and everything's going well. And so you start taking on a lot of the responsibility for his behavior on yourself. And that's wrong.
Now, in terms of your children, was it at that point when you saw what was going on with your children that pushed you over the edge, that you said, I have to leave? Or just was it just you got fed up? It's just finally the straw that broke the camel's back. You're just like, I got to get out of here.
No, definitely the abuse of the children was a big wake-up call for me. That as a woman, you can take, sort of blame for the actions that the abuser is taking, but then you start seeing him, hurting your children, and you're going, wait a minute, they're not doing, he just spilled his milk. That's all he did. It was very, it's something that was very simple, and yet, the punishment for that is just horrific. So you start seeing that, and that was, at one point in time, I just got to the point where I thought if he touches the kids again, I'm going to kill him, I mean, he was touching my children.
Yeah, a lot of women, though, are in jail now because they killed their abuser, and then they were punished. Because they were thought that it was premeditated. So they are locked up for premeditated murder. It's a very big issue. There's a young lady on Blog Talk Radio who does a show about women in prison and different issues, but that is a very big issue. A lot of women are in prison because they were trying to defend themselves, and maybe it didn't happen when they were being abused, so then they're put in jail. I just want to mention to some people some other wonderful organizations out there helping. The Family Violence Prevention Fund, endabuse.org, is another wonderful site. They have a lot of programs and places all over the country. And not just focusing on women, but one important aspect, I had other shows on domestic violence, is talking to men about this issue, because I think it's important that men are aware that their friends, other men, are abusers, and that they need to hold these men accountable. If you have a friend you know is abusing their wife or spouse, please speak to them about their problem. They have a problem, and I think it's helpful if another man speaks to a man. Paula, what is your opinion about that?
Absolutely, and one of the issues that Jackson Katz talks about is, why is this a women's issue? It should be a men's issue. I mean, if a man, if he robs somebody, it's not the shopkeeper's fault. It's the man's fault. So it's the perpetrator's fault. So why in our society are we looking at domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking as a woman's issue, when it really should be looked at as a man's issue?
And well, it should be men. 95% of the abusers are men. Men do get abused. There are men. I know there are men who are in psychological and sometimes physical abusive relationships, because women do lash out physically. But the statistics are at least 95% are men who are abusing. So it is a man's issue, definitely. And from teaching our young children, you have boys, correct?
Yes, I do, 3 boys.
So how do you teach them about this issue? What does mommy do? What is mommy going to work every day for? How do you teach them about what you're doing and how they can develop healthy relationships as they grow up?
Well, I think for my children that they were, they saw me being abused and they were abused themselves. So they are of the mindset of that they would never do that to anybody, and they would never let anybody, do that to them again. So they understand. But I don't know, with their friends and with their peers, and sometimes, that it's the media and how, sort of women are looked at as possessions rather than, rather than human beings, like all the hip-hop and all these things. And it's very difficult in our society. Our young people are being exposed to sort of the media perception of women rather than valuing them for human beings and for their minds and for, what they can be in the world. And they're being sexualized in our
rock music and all kinds of forms of music, women are property and sex symbols, and that's what people are being bombarded to. And our magazines, even ads for dish detergent, can become sexual, and there's a woman, there. But somebody asked me in the chat room about how you're financing the organization. I know you take donations. Are you getting grants from the government, the United States government, or from other governments?
Well, for the past 10 years, we have not gotten any government funding, and we're currently writing a grant that through Office for Victims of Crime that has come out. And so if we do get this grant, it would be in October, and it would be our first, you know, major government funding. So that would be nice. I mean, we've been surviving on a grant from Switzerland for the past 2 years, and from a foundation in Switzerland. So that's enabled us to grow and to expand our mission. But mostly it's the donations, individual donations that come in.
Mm-hmm.
They're really helping us.
Again, let's mention, tell them your website again, Paula, your address.
Well, the address is www.866uswomen. So it's the same as the phone number.
So now you know, in February is Teen Dating Violence Month. I did a show about teen dating violence, and I had some students from DoSomething.org who got small grants to try to work in their high schools. Can you imagine as a parent that it's Teen Dating Violence Month? I have a teenager, and it just really sends chills up my spine that as a teenager, you already are encountering this issue of abusive relationship.
Sure, yeah, it's frightening. It is frightening to how many teenagers out there, you know, get themselves in abusive relationships. Sometimes we will get calls from teenage girls who are overseas who are minors, and it's really difficult to help them. And we can call Office of Children's Issues for the State Department and talk to them about, you know, the abuse that the teenagers are going through, but we can't, you know, help them get back to the United States because they're minors and they're still under their parents' control.
It's very difficult. Now, you know, in some cultures, people might be thinking, well, why are you as an American going in there telling people what to do with their lives? What do you say to that?
Well, you know, the human rights, I mean, the international human rights, people have the right to be safe in their own homes. I mean, and no matter where you are in the world, I don't think, you know, if you're not safe in your own home in America or if you're not safe in your own home in a foreign country, that's wrong. Even if there are not laws in place to protect you for domestic violence or child abuse, it's still wrong. So, you know, there are obstacles we encounter when we try to help, you know, women who are being abused in foreign countries where it's not illegal to be abused.
Yes, yes. I want to mention one of the organizations here in Philadelphia, Women in Transition. They were on my domestic violence podcast I had last year, and their web address, helpwomen.org, Women in Transition, that's another wonderful organization that you can reach out to if you're here in Philadelphia. But with Paula's organization, it's all over the globe. So if you have someone that you know you may be speaking with, a college roommate, again, she was a young woman, Paula. She was college educated. The person she was with was college educated. So on the outside, you know, everything looks, you know, nice, shiny, and new. But there were some cracks there. So please listen to your friends if they're calling you from overseas, the tone in their voice, and what's going on with them, and reach out to them and let them know about Paula's organization. Now, on the crisis line, some people you're not able to help, I'm sure, but are they just able to call and just talk to a counselor or talk to someone on the hotline about what's going on just to kind of vent a little bit?
Absolutely. We get a lot of those cases. In fact, most of the women that call, we can't get them out because they're in countries where they don't have access to their passports and there's travel bans on them. Or they can't come out because they've been in that foreign country for so long that if they come back to the United States, probably a judge is just going to make them send their children back to the foreign country to the abuser because that country is going to have jurisdiction. So that's what we do, a lot of that, a lot of sort of that emotional and psychological support. We have professional counselors that we can refer them to so they can have you know, longer-term ongoing counseling. We have the advocates available 24/7 so they can call and speak to an advocate. We also do a lot of that when we can't actually, you know, physically get them out of the country
now,
and back into the United States.
How does somebody want to volunteer to be on your call line? Do they have to be in your state, or can they be in a different state and try to work with you somehow? Maybe they're a social work student or they're just an individual who wants to help. Can someone just volunteer with you?
Well, What we do now is we have a two-day training that takes place in Portland, Oregon, where we're headquartered. And
okay.
we are starting to think about going to other cities in the United States and training, because the crisis line can be answered from anywhere in the United States. It's a toll-free 800 number that, you know, is in the office during the day, but for the swing and overnight shift, it's answered by volunteers from their home.
Okay.
And also on the weekends. Sometimes it's in the office, sometimes it's, you know, with the volunteer. But they do need to go through a two-day training. For that, yeah. And we are starting, like I said, starting to think about training in other cities. And if we do decide to do that, we would have that information on our website. So that would, you know, be great. You know, we do have women who have trained in Portland, Oregon, and then have subsequently moved to other states, and they still are able to take the crisis line and volunteer with us.
Now, what number should someone call if they're interested in volunteering? Do they still call the hotline, or is there another number they should call?
No, we call the business office, and that's 503-203-1444.
Okay. Also, just again, want to mention her website, 866uswomen.org. Thank you so much, Paula, for coming on this morning. We only have like 2 minutes left. What is something you can tell? What's some words of hope you can share with women who may be going through domestic violence situation?
Well, for our population, I think what's important for American women in the United States to know is if you're meeting somebody who's a foreigner and you're planning to go overseas, or if you're an American woman and you're married to an American and you're planning to go overseas, or if you're going overseas to do a study abroad program or just to travel and you meet somebody, that your freedoms as an American are not going to travel with you, that you're going to be under the laws of that foreign country. So if you find yourself in an abusive relationship, or you're being, you know, sexual assault or stalking, that you might not have the same protections you would in the U.S. And I think that's really important to know. And then you're going to also run into those jurisdictional issues if you are married to somebody or you've been living over there for you know, several years, that it may be really, really hard to get back. And I know when I went overseas, I thought, I can come home anytime I want. I'm American. And that's not the truth. So if women know that before they leave, they can maybe put some kind of legal things in place, like, you know, get the person to sign, if I ever hit you or if things ever get bad, you have my permission to come back to the United States. So nobody wants to think about those things. It's like a prenuptial agreement.
It's for your own safety. You know, it's for your own safety, and I think that's one of the keys. And also taking your life into your hands. We talked earlier at a show, 11:30, about women and their financial education, and just like this is your physical safety, your psychological safety. You have to take this into your own hands. Again, thank you so much, Paula, for coming on this morning.
Joy, thank you so much for having me.
Please stay in touch, okay?
I will, definitely. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Have a nice Saturday.
You too. Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for listening this morning. I want to let you know you can follow me on twitter.com/joykeys. You can also become a fan on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Next week, we're going to be talking to playwright Charles Fuller. But we're not going to be talking about plays. We're going to be talking about a children's book he wrote called Snatch. So please tune in next Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time to listen to Charles Fuller, playwright. And at the end of the month, May 29th, Danny Glover and Bill Guttentag. Danny Glover, yes, the actor Danny Glover, will be on the show talking about his documentary, A Soundtrack for a Revolution. Thank you so much for listening. And again, you can follow me on twitter.com/joykeys. Don't forget to mark this show and any other shows you listen to as a favorite. And you can become a fan on Facebook of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Everyone have a lovely Saturday. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I hope to hear from you next Saturday. Thank you very much.